When we look out our windows here at WBUR in Boston, we can peer into the offices next door to us. There's a foosball table in what looks like a kitchen area and a giant map of the world on the wall. The offices belong to Partners in Health, headquartered here, but delivering health care in 12 countries all around the world. Back in 1987, the group got its start by supporting a one-room clinic in Haiti. Today, Partners in Health serves almost 3 million people in countries such as Rwanda, Peru, and Malawi. And this year, Partners is marking its 25th anniversary. Joining us are Ophelia Dahl, Executive Director, and Paul Farmer, Founding Director of Partners in Health. Welcome to you both, and congratulations.
Thank you.
Let's begin with Haiti. Paul, you've written a book called Haiti, After the Earthquake. And we understand from reading about Haiti that the history has been divided by the 2010 earthquake, the Haiti before it, and the Haiti since. Give our audience an idea of the need in Haiti today.
Well, the need is great, but I'm not sure I subscribe to the notion that Haiti is divided before and after the earthquake. I see the continuities more than the break. Now, of course, it takes a while when you're in the middle of events like that to see them as somehow not determining everything that will go forward. And it was very difficult in the first weeks and months after the earthquake to feel that this was not a whole new normal. But as the months have gone by and then the years, you say, yeah, you know, that was a problem we had before the quake, meaning housing. Or yes, we had serious problems with natural disasters before then. It was the enormity of the earthquake and not the fact that it was the first bad event to befall Haiti in recent times.
So you're saying it exacerbated, it brought to light the problems already in Haiti.
Yeah, and in medicine there's a somewhat clumsy expression but useful here that it was an acute on chronic event. And that's the metaphor I use in that book. You know, the chronic problems of joblessness, land tenure, declining yields in agricultural food insecurity, not having enough kids in school, not having good medical care, those are all chronic problems. And then, boom, the earthquake revealed to a lot of the rest of the world things that Haitians already knew.
One of the problems that came out after the earthquake was cholera, because before the earthquake, there hadn't been a single recorded case of cholera ever in Haiti. Ophelia, what does Partners in Health do now via cholera prevention, and is it under control?
It's not under control. One of the things that Partners in Health did after the cholera epidemic unfolded was to make sure that we could respond, but it happened that the cholera epidemic actually began. The epicenter, if you like, of that epidemic was in the places in which we worked, because it actually began in Mirbalé and traveled through a water source of a river there. What Partners in Health did is respond in the way that it knows how. It deployed community health workers. It worked on treating the active cases that it saw, and it worked on prevention with the cholera vaccine.
Again, this is another one of those acute on chronic problems. An acute introduction of a new pathogen into a chronically weak public sanitation system, or non-existent. So we've been there 25 years in parts of those areas, and we had worked hard and still work hard at providing medical care. The name of the Haitian organization is Zamina Santé, which just means Partners in Health in Haitian. Largest employer of doctors and nurses in rural Haiti, in any case. And there, you know, we were not able to stop cholera from exploding like a bomb right in that area. Now, we were able to save the lives of the people we cared for, and we cared for probably now over 100,000 people just in these sites where we work. Another thing that we did is to say, look, it's going to be a long-term effort to finally turn our attention, not just Partners in Health, but Haiti's public authorities, other NGOs, turn our attention to water security, to building. You know, here we are sitting in Boston in the studio. We're drinking water, tap water. We know we're not going to get cholera. To do this, you actually have to invest very heavily in public sanitation and water. So that's a 10-year process. But we thought, what can we do short-term to protect people? You can give them chlorine tablets, which we did. You can try a new vaccine, new but already tested, which we also did. So we've been trying. We can introduce new technologies for water purification at the household level, at the village level, et cetera. So we're really trying to do with partners all those things.
I want to take you back to when you first both went to Haiti. Paul, you were in between finishing your undergraduate and a year before medical school. And Ophelia, you were told to go somewhere and do something important. What was Haiti like then for you, Paul? And were you told, you know, you better get your expectations in check about what can be done in a country like this?
Well, I'm happy to tell you I wasn't told that I needed to get my expectations in check. I can't remember anyone from my family or my teachers, college teachers, telling me that. So my expectations were wildly out of check, and that was good for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always happy to see young people, and it's often young Americans, with, you know, completely unreasonable ideas about what they can do in a place like Haiti. And that's good. And I'll just say that, you know, my first year there was very humbling because I worked pretty much as a physician's assistant in a small clinic, and a really talented young Haitian doctor, but way too many patients, way too few tools. We didn't have the right medications, no laboratory. We didn't have properly trained nurses. It was a mess. And that year, or the better part of a year, convinced me that that was no way to practice medicine in Haiti. And in fact, these wildly ambitious dreams were a much better way to think about what we're doing. So this hospital, this big hospital we built after the earthquake, is actually built in that same town where Ophelia and I met, where we had this very typical but disappointing experience of how medicine was delivered in Haiti in 1983.
I came to Haiti in 1983. As you said, my dad had urged me. I was a bit of a loose end in the UK, and he just said, why don't you go and see a portion of the world that you haven't seen? And of course, being an 18-year-old who grew up in Europe, I thought I had seen quite a bit of the world. So it was a jarring experience for me to go and suddenly witness destitution and poverty for the first time. Being there in Haiti and being an 18-year-old and having these sort of new eyes and see all of this, it can be a very disempowering feeling. But actually looking around and then finding and meeting Paul and meeting other Haitian friends that I'm still in touch with or working with made a big difference. But when you go and see something that you can imagine and then you see it firsthand and you think, you really don't need any experience or any background to be able to see that the conditions are absolutely appalling. There was nothing where we were, nothing. It wasn't that there was a lack of medical services. There was none. So I think to some extent it was, on the one hand, it was daunting to think about making a dent in any of that. On the other hand, it was easy to see that there was only one place to go from there, and that was up.
Paul Farmer and Ophelia Dahl, two founders of Partners in Health, which started 25 years ago with a one-room clinic in Haiti. And Paul, that one-room clinic is now a complex with a full-service hospital. Another new hospital will open soon. But is this model sustainable, bringing in private foundation dollars to build these hospitals? Or do you hope that it's spurring a private, nonprofit sector of Haitian healthcare?
Yeah, those are great questions. I would just say that we are confident that this is sustainable. The gamble that we made more than a dozen years ago was to try and expand our work across Haiti in the public sector with the public health branch of the Haitian government. So we did that because we saw that those institutions, hospitals and clinics, were really falling apart even as we were growing a nicer and basically a more robust medical center. We knew that was wrong.
So your model is to work with these community health centers. Tell me more about it.
I'll just take an example. A town of 55,000 people, 2 hours from where the hospital that we started 25 years ago is based. The facility is serving in principle the catchment area, but in fact all of the patients from there are going up to see us in two truckloads of them a day. And so we went there and found out, well, they don't even have a doctor. They don't even have a nurse. They have a licensed practical nurse, a very competent woman. They have a few medications. They don't have reliable electricity. They don't have a laboratory, a lot like what I saw in 1984. And so what we do is put together a team of doctors, physicians, lab, pharmacy capacity, and go in and rehab the place physically, retrain what employees are there, bring them in. We bring ourselves onto their team in a way. And then we start offering services, anything from family planning, tuberculosis diagnosis care and cure, HIV services, and primary care. That's a lot of work. The other thing is you remove the barriers because the population's there. We already knew that, 55,000 people. They're all schlepping over to Conj where we are. You know, they're paying money to get on that truck. And, of course, what happens after that is they stop going to Conj.
And that was a lesson that we learned fairly early on when we saw that this, the first private clinic that we built, it's really the only clinic. We've now rebuilt over 60 facilities across all of the countries in which we work. And all of them, except for that very first clinic, are built on public land. They belong to the ministries of health of the governments. It's easy to see when a whole sort of glut of people come to the one clinic, and then you realize, gee, we'll be building a parallel health system here if we don't start working with the government. How can we make sure that this is sustainable? Well, we've got to work with the governments. In the end, an NGO should not be the institution that's really creating rights for the population.
As Partners in Health has evolved, you've gone from dealing with diseases typical in underdeveloped countries, TB, cholera, to now including cancer. Tell me about why you're moving in that direction.
Well, I want to interrogate the question a little bit. It is easy to describe it that way, and many of our own coworkers do, that first we were doing A and now we're doing B.
Well, you're doing A and B.
Right. And I would just say that's an important part because when you open the door of a clinic or a hospital, you're going to treat whatever comes in. And in Lesotho, there isn't going to be any malaria because it's up in the mountains. And in Rwanda, there's going to be a lot less malaria now because there's more prevention. But as for some of the diseases you see later in life, sometimes, you know, you see acute leukemia in children and Burkitt's lymphoma, et cetera, cancers you see in children, we've been seeing them forever. I mean, meaning as soon as we open the doors, in comes breast cancer. Having really solid programs like the ones we've developed for AIDS or tuberculosis, that's harder work to do. It's very expensive and requires lots of partnerships, right? We're spending more and more time focusing on what a lot of people call non-communicable disease because the longer our patients live, the more we see these problems. We're in patients who would have died 20 years ago of AIDS, now they're 50 or 60 and now they get other problems. And, you know, we're taking care of those too as best we can. I could just give one obvious example between two places. You know, we might be the same organization, strained and, you know, feeling battered, may at the same time be dealing with a near famine in one place and an epidemic of obesity in another. In fact, Partners in Health is doing just that. It's a hard kind of work in some ways, even spiritually, because you're thinking, my God, here they have no food and here they're eating too much and it's the same world. But I think that's the nature of focusing on health disparities.
Ophelia, what are the lessons learned from this community-based approach that can be applied here in the United States?
One of the things that we learned early on is that even if you build a wonderful clinic in a place in the developing world, in a rural area, some patients are too sick or too poor or have all kinds of other issues that stop them from coming to seek the care. We were able to lift that barrier by training community health workers, and we think that the same model can be applied here. If you could treat chronic illnesses in the home, in the community, that would be a very good start. You know, think about it, asthma, diabetes, get them in the homes. It's good care, and it's actually cheaper.
I would just add that this is one of the most desperately needed components to improve the quality of American health care. You have chronic asthma. It's really only a serious flare that you'd ever want to manage in a hospital. But really, should you be managing it in a clinic just for routine health maintenance? No, it could be done at home with a community health worker. And you'd think about lots of other illnesses like the ones I treat, AIDS, tuberculosis. 2 years of treatment for drug-resistant TB, it's a long time, a lot of side effects. You need accompaniment. That's what we call what the community health workers offer, what we offer too. Now, back to American healthcare. The amount of money that's going into American healthcare system is just huge, some 17% of the GDP. So that's not sustainable, back to the S word. How can we improve quality and reduce expenditure? Well, unnecessary emergency room visits and hospital visits are very expensive to the system, and they're also not the way to deliver care for this. So community health workers could improve the quality, the outcomes of American medical care, not for heart transplant or orthopedic surgery or something, but for most chronic diseases.
Paul Farmer, Founding Director of Partners in Health, and Ophelia Dahl, Executive Director. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.